Thank you, Sue. And good morning. Welcome to the Court of Appeals. This is the second of three oral arguments. Judges Cochran, Larson, join me, Judge Sleater, in this Zoom format. Well, we are recording the proceeding, and no other recording is allowed. It's also being live streamed as well. We do ask counsel for that reason that you do identify yourself and who you represent at the beginning of your comments. And with that, counsel for appellant, you may identify yourself and begin. Oh,
Good
I'm
morning.
sorry. Let me first, before you do, I'll identify the case file A240669, George Michael McFadden, who's the petitioner appellant, versus Jessica Marie Bash, who was formerly known as McFadden, is respondent. Very well. Thank you. You may proceed.
Morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. I'm Bill Thompson on behalf of the appellant, George McFadden. As the court is likely aware, a very long procedural posture that led us to this point in time, and that was outlined by both counsel in its briefs. The parties were divorced in 2018. They have one minor child together who is currently 11 years old. At the time of the court's district court's findings, he was 10. At the original divorce proceedings, they were awarded joint legal and joint physical custody. In approximately January of 2019, the appellant moved to Carlton, Minnesota, and the child lived primarily with him until approximately September of 2022, when the district court in Sherburne County issued a temporary order that granted the child to attend school where the respondent resided. And at that point in time, venue of this matter was then transferred to Carlton, Minnesota. Eventually, an evidentiary hearing was scheduled. That was in front of the Honorable Rebecca Stummy. That took place over 4 separate days. And then a February 27, 2024 order was issued. And it's from that order that we are appealing. The major issue, and before I begin, in my statement of the case, as Mr. Gilbert indicated in the responsive brief, I did raise a number of issues. I did not represent the appellant at the trial, and then following my research and going through all of the necessary documents, I limited it to the argument that we made in our appellant's brief. And so we do agree that those other arguments waived in the statement of the case are barred from being heard today. The main issue that we're appealing today is whether or not the transfer of custody and subsequent parenting time order was an abuse of discretion. The
Mr.
court.
Thompson, on that point, just to clarify, and you did use the phrase abuse of discretion in your brief. And so I'm assuming, and it does read that way, at least from your brief, that your client does not contest the factual findings that were made by the district court, correct?
It depends on which factual basis you are talking about. Because I think when I get through my argument here, Judge, I do believe there are some factual conclusions that the judge made, at least when it comes to some of those best interest factors and how they should have been applied.
That kind of, I think, I understand your answer to that, and I understand that as well. And so, the case law that we, and I'm looking at the Woolsey decision from the Supreme Court, a district court abuses its discretion by making findings of fact that are unsupported by the evidence, misapplying the law, or delivering a decision that is against logic and the facts on the record. And I take it from your answer, you're kind of leaning towards that last description of abuse of discretion, that the court delivered a decision that is against logic and the facts on the record. Would that be a
Correct,
fair
Judge.
summary?
Yes.
So how, when we aren't fact finders, and of course we know the best interest factors are just that, are factors, so no one of which will lead to the decision, but you take them all together and look at them, even if, as I understand and see, that your client disagrees with some of the factors, you concede a couple of them, I think, as well. How would we reach that decision given our deferential review to say that it was against logic and the facts on the record?
So, Judge, I think when you look at those factors, such as, and I did have them in order, but I think in just highlighting some of those, in part of the conclusions the judge made, for example, when talking about whether or not domestic violence occurred, the court made a specific finding that no domestic violence occurred. Yet then goes on to say that that factor then favored the respondent, which then does not make any sense and is contrary to any logic. Another example would be when looking at the mental, physical health and whether or not there was any chemical dependency issues, the court stated that there were none, yet then went on to say that that factor then favored the respondent. And it's those types of conclusions that the court reached don't make any sense when looked at logically by this court. When you look at these factors and go through them, the court would say one thing and then use the other in making its final determination.
Would
And
it
that
be safe then? And I appreciate those examples. Would it be safe to say then, Mr. Thompson, that at best for your client, the judge should have said those are neutral factors?
Yes.
So how, given that, if they're neutral, does that offset other factors in which the court found did favor the respondent mother?
I think when you go through each of those individual factors, Judge, I think there's potential issues with almost every one. I actually use those two as glaring issues that we take with the district court. And when you look at what is really a balancing, then, and we agree that the district court has the ability and is in the best position to balance those factors. But when she makes conclusions that say that those are then clearly favorable to the respondent when should have been neutral or whatever, it's extremely difficult then to figure out and try and ascertain what the district court looked at in making its final determination of what's in the best interest of the child. Does that answer your question, Your Honor?
I do understand the argument. Yes, I appreciate that. Let me ask a broader question. As you pointed out in your brief, your client is not contesting the conclusion, the findings and conclusion that endangerment to the child emotional, I believe it was the focus by the district court while in your client's care. Would it be safe to say that when that conclusion not contested, that does make its way almost necessarily into some of the best interest findings? And I think you pointed out some of the statements that are made, because obviously if there's emotional endangerment, that's going to be directly affect the court's conclusion or findings as to some of those best interest factors. Would that be a true statement?
I believe that potentially could be true. I'm not disputing that. There are ways and means for almost everything, to potentially be included under the global best interest. But I think what the court needs to look at is, to me, the record is devoid of the true balancing of what's in the child's best interest. In many respects, it looks like the district court made a conclusion about what it wanted to happen and then went back forth and made all of these best interests fit what it wanted for its final conclusion, which is the opposite of the way it actually should go. The other thing is, when you look at like the best interest factor concerning the preference of the child, using that as another example, there was testimony that the child themselves wanted to return to Carleton, but the court excluded that without making specific findings about the child's mental maturity, age, and sufficient ability to express a preference. And yet, then again, ruled that that factor should favor the respondent, which again
So,
doesn't.
counsel, you're talking about factor three there, is that correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
In reviewing the district court's findings on that factor, could we, it seems to me the court might be implicitly finding that the child is not of sufficient age, ability, and maturity to express an opinion, given the analysis there. Would you agree with that?
Your Honor, I cannot answer whether what Judge Stummy was truly thinking at the time she wrote the opinion. I guess you could make an implicit argument there that it was presumed to be included. However, I think that is also then one of the problems because you could make that same argument in just about every case, on just about every finding. And I think it behooves any district court to make specific findings so that the parties themselves can ascertain how the conclusions were then reached. And
So,
I
in
think.
your view, then, we should remand this back to the district court for more detailed findings. Is that the appropriate remedy here?
Yes, Judge, I believe a remand would be necessary in this particular case.
On the attorney fee question, are you challenging any of the factual findings that the district court made to support the award?
We did not brief that issue, Judge.
Didn't brief the issue. Okay.
And so we did not challenge the district court's award of attorney's fees.
All right. Thank you.
Sorry, Judge, with the questions, I got a little off track.
I thought you did brief the issue
Yeah,
of
I was just going to ask
attorney
that. Oh,
fees.
maybe I
And
did.
looking at your brief, I believe you did.
My apologies.
I was a little surprised by your answer. That's why I took a
I'm
minute to
sure
get my
respondent would
brief.
not object if you're withdrawing
Yeah,
that.
exactly.
And I believe, Judge, when looking at the issue of attorney's fees, and I apologize, I know from my client, the issue of custody and parenting time has been the tantamount, and that's what I focused on here and getting here today. My biggest concern when looking at those issues of attorney's fees, a lot of it was based on, and it was primarily based on, conduct-based attorney's fees. And in that particular issue, when you look at it, this was a contested custody matter where both sides are clearly entitled to raise whatever issues necessary to make that final determination. The court seemed to take exception with a motion that was filed by the appellant and the appellant's attorney. And the problem with that is there was a large or a big problem with what happened when this matter was transferred from Sherburne County to Carlton County. And the Sherburne County judge never really had the evidentiary hearing that subsequent to that initial temporary order, it was then transferred to the Carlton County District Court and that award. And so a lot of these motions were, I think, in partly based just on confusion that was there. I do not believe it was appropriate for the court to award conduct-based attorney's fees in such a situation. I think, both sides were trying their best to assert their particular rights. Obviously, there was a continued disagreement over what custody should be. My client, obviously, given the fact that the child had lived with him primarily for 3 years, did not agree that the Sherburne County or the Sherburne County temporary order should stand and tried to assert those rights. Then other motions were filed, including challenging the expert witness, or in this case, the custody evaluator. And I think all of those things were appropriate. And there really wasn't anything that was done in bad faith. It was just simply the appellant asserting his necessary rights to make a decision on the issues of custody and parenting time. And I think when the record is reviewed as a whole, in looking at the procedural posture that led to this case, that is supported by the evidence that's there. One thing in conclusion that I wanted to talk about was the court's complete lack of the fourth balancing factor, which is harm to the child versus the benefit of the child. In this particular case, the Sherburne County Court created a situation where the child had lived primarily in the Carlton area for approximately 3 years, then changed that on a temporary basis. And what the court seems to be doing is saying that a change is going to then harm the child by returning the child to the Carlton area. It is completely disingenuous to just use that as a default when it was created by the court system itself. And, my client was never allowed to really have a hearing on that particular matter. The court didn't consider that same argument when they granted the temporary motion, but now are using it against the appellant. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. You will have 5 minutes of rebuttal. And Mr. Gilbert, you may identify yourself, who you represent, and begin your comments.
Thank you. May it please the court, I am Matt Gilbert, appearing on behalf of respondent Jessica Bosch. It is well-settled law that the district court has broad discretion with regard to parenting time and custody decisions. Appellant does not agree with the court's exercise of its broad discretion to ask this court to reweigh the evidence and come up with a different result. Appellant has engaged in a campaign to minimize respondent's role in the minor child's life. Such efforts include, but are not limited to, not informing respondent of his move to Carlton, Minnesota, moving the minor child to Carlton without respondent's consent, enrolling the minor child in Carlton schools, daycare, and hockey without respondent's consent, restricting respondent's parenting time to when the minor child is free, deeming the minor child's time at daycare, hockey with his grandparents as being more important than the parenting time that respondent should be having with her son, listing his girlfriend as the minor child's mother with the school's medical provider.
Mr. Gilbert, I'm going to interrupt you just a moment. And primarily, I wanted to ask you to follow up, respond to Mr. Thompson's point. There does seem to be, he's identified a few of the factors that he makes a good point that the court initially indicates there's no domestic abuse, that the child's too young to give a preference, and yet goes into a few paragraphs and then makes a conclusion that those favor your client. That does seem inconsistent on its face. And how do we, when we evaluate for an abuse of discretion, should we take into account those particular type of factors and how the court analyzed it?
Your Honor, as a part of the court's analysis, they're analyzing all the best interest factors as well as all relevant information. With that, I think the best interest factor 12 is the most important here, which is the willingness and ability of parents to cooperate in the rearing of the child to maximize sharing of information and minimize exposure of the child to parental conflict. And there's numerous findings related to this factor. And frankly, this is the one factor why custody is being modified. The court, it's unclear from the record, what weight, if any, is given to whether domestic abuse occurred, as well as to whether substance abuse plays any role in this case. Again, this whole case has to do with parental alienation and appellant undermining respondent as a mother of this minor child.
So, is it your, if I understand your answer, Mr. Gilbert, then because you took me to a different factor, is your point that even if we were to assume those two or three, I believe it was, where the court seemed to be heading towards a neutral finding on those factor, and if even if we assume that's what the court implicitly meant, and otherwise disregard those, that there's sufficient other factors that the court did make proper findings, and they're based in the record such that there's no abuse of discretion in its ultimate conclusion.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Thank you.
So, can I ask you about the first factor, which has to do with the child's physical, emotional, cultural, spiritual, and other needs, and the effect of the proposed arrangements on the child's needs and development? Did the district court adequately consider the child's that list of needs there, physical, emotional, cultural, spiritual, and other needs when they're not called out in any detail in its analysis of that first factor.
Your Honor, again, this is a balancing test. The court did make very detailed factual findings. The order is very lengthy in itself. And again, this is it's precisely what this court should not be doing in each individual factor. From the
Well, I'm not
briefing, there's
suggesting that
no.
we make any findings on those factors. Clearly, that's not our role. But I'm wondering, is it necessary to remand back to the district court to make findings on those factors, or what it, since it didn't expressly address those, and similarly, in number three, it didn't expressly decide whether the child was of sufficient ability, age, and maturity to express an independent and reliable preference. Are the
And Your Honor,
findings sufficient, or is a remand necessary?
the findings are sufficient, in my opinion, especially when you're looking at each factor and how it applies to, again, which what really is a parental alienation case. It's really that 12th factor that the court heavily relied upon in its opinion. And appellant, it's his burden of proof. He hasn't shown that a different analysis of either of those factors would change anything here. With regard to the child's wishes, the custody evaluator had a very detailed report and identified that appellant had been coaching the minor child to express an interest in staying with him. Again, these are hearsay statements that the court found that the child could not reliably express a competent preference in terms of what happened. And that is, again, relying on the neutral custody evaluator that the district court appointed in this case. Additionally, with regard to the attorney's fees issue, the court has broad discretion with regard to the award of attorney's fees. There's numerous bases cited in the order supporting the award of attorney's fees. And these bases include the appellant had unnecessarily contributed to the length and extent of the proceeding by filing an emergency motion with the Carlton County Court 11 days after the Sherburne County Court had determined the school of the minor child. In his motion, appellant did not raise any new issues that he previously argued before the Sherburne County Court. Appellant also filed a motion to exclude the court-appointed custody evaluator's report and falsely claimed the custody evaluator's report did not address the best interest factors, even though the best interest factors were specifically identified in the custody evaluator's report. Appellant also attempted to relitigate other issues, including a baseless argument that the party stipulated to a modified definition of joint legal custody, where there's no factual or legal basis to support such a claim. Respondent had requested substantially more in attorney's fees than $6,000, but that's the amount the district court ordered. And again, bad faith is not required for an award of conduct-based attorney's fees. And these actions in themselves unnecessarily contributed to the length and extent of the proceeding as found by the trial court. A lot of this is credibility determinations, which are left up to the trial court. The trial court made a series of credibility determinations throughout the course of a four-day trial. And I'm not going to further prolong the matter. I have nothing further unless your honors have any other questions.
I see no other questions, Mr. Gilbert. Thank you. We'll turn back to Mr. Thompson. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Your Honor, I'll be extremely brief.
Can I just ask you a question, Mr. Thompson, on something you left off with in your principal argument, referencing the 3 years that the child was in your client's custody, and you made that same argument in relation to a couple of the of the best interest factors, and I think your argument is that the court didn't properly give credit during that time. My question to you, though, is it not true that the court made specific findings that your client made that move and took the child out of school to live with him without the consent of the mother? And so, in effect, it would be a self-fulfilling self-help kind of a benefit to if the court was to accept that argument, or the district court had in terms of those 3 years.
So, Judge, that's a multifaceted question. I'll try and break it down. The court did make those findings, and so that I do not dispute. However, I don't necessarily believe it's inappropriate for the court to consider those factors or that situation because the final determination is what's in a child's best interest. And when you're looking at that type of situation where a child is acclimated to a school, I think it's disingenuous of the court because we all know changing schools, changing environments, changing whatever is potentially going to have an impact on the child. What the court failed to do then was consider, I think, at least for the, even if you want, if the court wanted to condemn the appellant's conduct, it needed to at least consider how negative the impact would be in transitioning the child back to an area where he had lived and resided in for 3 years, where he had gone to hockey, where he had gone to school. I think that that's still something appropriate that the court needs to consider in that final factor of harm versus benefit that the court needs to consider in allowing for a transfer and change of custody. I hope that answers your question.
Yes, it does. Thank you.
The big thing I want to conclude with, Judge, is it's abundantly clear the district court did not like my client. That in and itself is not what the court needs to consider. It's overall what's in the final best interest of the child. In this particular matter, because of the distance between the children or between the two households at this point, one side or the other was going to end up with the short end of the stick. But what's problematic is that it seems like the court took issue with my client's conduct, but the same is going to hold true for the respondent in this matter now that she has the child living with her. Life happens for all kids. We want them in extracurricular activities. We want them in participating in school events. We want them going to the doctor and dentist at a nearby place. And those types of things are impacted when one parent is 2 hours apart. And it would be one thing for the court to just cite what we all know is an eventual possibility because of life happening. But it's another thing to penalize one side. But then when the same things are happening on the other side, it's viewed as okay. And that's where, Mr. Gilbert talked about parental alienation. I think the argument there is it wasn't parental alienation. It was simply the fact that there is a 2 hour, 2.5 hour distance between those households, and that alone is going to impact the role that each parent has. Thank you.
And thank you to both counsel. We appreciate your answers to our questions today and your briefing. We will now take the matter under advisement. We will issue an opinion within 90 days. You each have a good day.
Thank
Thank
you.
you.